in free software fonts and trying to get original free software fonts made in a community. That's a long term. Long term. And so, yeah, that's.
Thank you, Dave. And Daniel?
Yeah, I'm Daniel Lassie. I volunteer for SAL International and have helped with the Linux with Graphite and attempt to integrate it with Pango and GNOME.
Okay.
Tim Eves, an SAL member. Involved with the hacking graphite a little bit with Alliance, or more later with some of the refactoring and stuff. I'm also working on integrating graphite into other packages.
Oh, sorry. I'm Sarah Corral and I'm with SIL International and I'm one of the, I'm sort of doing the main, the bulk of the graphite, the core graphite development.
I'm Ken Chanda from Japan. I'm working on M17 library.
Okay, Liam Quinn, Worldwide Web Consortium, W3C, and where I'm the XML activity lead, whatever that means. I'm Mrs. XML, and I'm also, we're doing a new version of XSLFO, the formatting specification. And so I'm partly here to promote standards. And I have a background in typography.
I'm Ed Traeger. I run a website called unifont.org, and I'm from the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor. And I think last year I kind of moderated things a little bit for this, the first conference, and I'm going to serve a similar role this year in moderating the conference.
Hi, I'm Eric Bader. I work for IBM on the ICU team. I'm the author of the ICU TextMan engine. And before that, I worked at, well, I worked several places, but I also worked at Apple, and I was one of the authors of the, QuickDraw GX line out, which evolved into AAT after I left.
Hi, I'm Dennis Jacquet. I'm part of the Digital View Font team. So we provide a free font editor of Life Bissinger, and we added many characters and we added some scripts to it.
I'm Ben Lowry, and I'm also Digital View, so I'm also designing everything these days.
Hi, I'm Simon Hausmann. I work on PD and I work on Qt for Flutter.
Okay, great. So, Simon, could you actually put the schedule on the web so we can all look at it? Because I have a couple of printouts of it if somebody wants to look at the printout.
No.
Oh, are there printouts? Is that what that is? A stack of printouts?
Yeah.
Oh, well, why don't we just go over the schedule really quickly? So, I think, as most of you know, last year in October we had a meeting in Boston, and the summary upshot of that meeting was there was a decision that the Pango developers and the Qt developers would work together on HearthBuzz to get a unified text layout rendering pipeline, some sort of a reality, right? And I think that was the I think that collaboration has been quite successful, and I know Simon and Lars Noel from Qt and Vedad and several others have worked a lot on that, making that a reality. And I think then the purpose of one of the major purposes of the summit this year then is to further that goal, right? And then to also look at some of the other things that are going on to make world topography on the free desktop a reality. Right? When I was at the desktop architects meeting a few weeks ago in Mountain View, California, I called my talk World Topography. Right? The idea being that access should be available to all people using any language of script on the free desktop. So Behdad Esfahan, who's the Pango maintainer and who's been working quite actively on HuffBuzz, will be joining us this afternoon. He said something like 2 p.m. So what we've tried to do with the schedule is to try to accommodate Behdad, because it's pretty important that we'd like to have him here. So what we thought we'd do is have a series of lightning talks in the morning, and then look at the CJK Unifonts project, and also have a discussion on pan-Unicode fonts. Try to cover that stuff in the morning so that all the stuff related to HuffBuzz and Unified and the different text layout engines could be discussed in the afternoon. Okay, so any objections to that sound good? Okay, because the original plan, if Behdad were here in the morning, we could just dive right in with the HuffBuzz stuff and cover graphite and cover M17N and ICU right in the morning, right? But then Behdad would miss out on that stuff, and there's no way of us knowing exactly, you know, how familiar he is with M17N or graphite, things like that. Okay, so so I think we should start in right with the lightning talks, and OFL font update. Who is going to do OFL font update? Is that
and you guys have presentations on the
You guys wanted to go ahead and do that? Okay, so these lightning talks are somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 10 minute brief updates. So do you know where that presentation is?
I have it.
You have it? Okay.
You want the table? Should we just get some?
You want to give Seaman a... Oh, okay, you're going to connect your machine? All right.
You don't like white on white? When I worked in the UK, I used to get this really prestigious paper calendar from a paper, German paper firm called Zanders. It was supposed to be a real honour to get sent one of these. They would have things like the months would be white cut out in stencil and over a white background, so you'd have white days on a white background. And it was supposed to be, you know, you were too important to need a useful calendar if you got one of these. So I always figured this thing was me by mistake. But
I mean, would it, Dennis, would it be better to just plug into Siemens machine and And just have Seaman bring the presentation up.
I'd be amazed at the number of conferences I go to where it's the Linux people that at the start of their talk have to reboot their computers or they get laughed at. It's been a really bad advert for Linux.
Yeah, I'd rather actually still have the plastic sheets that you put on the overhead projector. It just works. And you don't waste time on them. But we had some original plan or thought on recording this in video, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I do have a voice recorder, so we will see how well we can maybe record the talks and get those up. Although it won't be streaming, but at least we can.
Well, I remember in October I was getting up at 4 in the morning in Hawaii and listening to Ed's 15-minute delay.
Well, we had Owen Taylor do something up.
Yeah, like the first day it was like 15-minute segments, 15 minutes delayed.
Yeah.
And so if I had anything to say by the time I heard it, it was too late.
So it would be nice if we had the technical capability, but the reality is we have to go with what we have, the people who are attending, so.
Pictures. The news. It's probably distance from the projector.
There's a big car, but I don't press that.
So what are you trying to do?
Trying to panic.
Can you reduce your resolution?
Your resolution is 1280.
I tried that.
This is Linux we're talking about.
Works for me.
Yeah. I changed it. That's the big problem I always have with Linux is getting the monitor to run at the correct resolution.
Yes.
It's fine.
Some Linux distributions have done work with Xorg. Xorg is trying to fix it, but in the meanwhile, some Linux distributions have done quite a lot of work, and some haven't. Boot from your Mandriva flash disk and they're one of the ones that did a lot of work on supporting projectors.
For MLC5, I downloaded the NVIDIA driver for it, which is actually kind of a nice package because it has all the scripts to build and install the driver for you, but every time you update the kernel and you reboot, the driver doesn't load.
Yes, Mandriva repackaged it, so that's not necessary anymore.
Oh, cool.
Using DKMS. Same with ATI.
I've been afraid to mess with it.
As far as I can tell, they like put a person on doing this for like months and actually got something that if your driver is actually supported by either the open source or the proprietary. If your card is supported by one of the drivers, it does actually work, and you can press the BIOS key to switch monitors and stuff. Xorg did that. Xorg has split it up into individual drivers by packages. Oh, sorry, mate.
Yes, the original guys took the NVIDIA proprietary card.
Oh, that one, okay. Beg your pardon, yes.
The object files, and every time you
Would it mean about just different tools that people can use to make free fonts? Most people actually design glyphs in Inkscape, and so they make SVGs that then they can import in FontForge.
But there are also some new programs. There's a Spyro. It was made by
Spyro.
That's really nice because you can really draw clips really quickly as you want them to be. And they're working on making it easier to import it in FontForge. So as things are yeah, that's an easy example of what it was done. So yeah, he's actually changing the glyph as we speak.
This is called Spyro, you said?
Spyro.
S-P-I-R-O.
Yes. Yeah. From Levine.com, L-E-V-I-E-N.
So whether you start from scratch or whether you have old scans of old typefaces from the 1600s or something like that, it's really easy to draw glyphs with that. So I think it's gonna bring more people to just draw fonts.
With Spyro, can you? Could you take a whole page of text and be able to grab
it? There's actual scripts. There's a script. Yeah. So you have your scan in I think PGM format. There's a script that can cut each character on its own, each clip on its own, and then there's another one that can merge them into categories. So all the A's are superimposed in layers into one picture. So then you can use that to draw the
idealized.
Yeah, the vectors.
And does it handle? Will it handle thousands of characters at a time?
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no limitation
it's
on.
It's pretty nice. I just kind of figured out how to import it into FontForge. So
yeah, that's because it's missing from the O1 table, and I've got.
So this is coming from Raph Levien. Rafe.
He pronounces it Rafe. It's spelled R-A-P-H.
Oh,
yeah, it's the guy that did Advogato as well.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
So it's
good enough.
So it's a Rafe in Spyro. Basically, you start with a really high quality scan of TechBlock. So this is like a JPEG, like 40 meg JPEG, so really, really high quality. And you cut it down to just a text block. And then he's got a segmenting program, which runs through the program, runs through the text block, and picks out any individual shapes. So you get like thousands of shapes from a block of text. And then he has a blending C program, which will classify these shapes into classes. So you'll tell that this shape looks like this shape. And then it will actually blend them into like 150 shapes in this example. And these are really, really sharp images of what these characters look like. With these old books, then you've got the method typeset, and the shape of the method that's been used to create these images on the page is actually not the shape which gets printed, because the ink spreads slightly when the metal hits the page. And so with early digital typefaces, then they were done based on looking at the shapes of the metal, so they're often too thin. And then with each imprint, the shapes are slightly different, because the ink spreads out a slightly different way. So there's always been a big art in making typeface revivals, because you have to look at a whole range of prints and then kind of guess at what the curve should be. So with this part of Race Toolkit, then you get a really clear sense of what the glyphs really are meant to be like. And that makes it very good for tracing, which is then where the Spyro technology comes in. Which is just completed a PhD at University of California, Berkeley in mathematics, where he's been working on a new kind of spline. It's not really new, it's been used for a long time, but he's got some innovations in there, which is And basically, it's based on like Euler spirals, So it makes drawing very smooth curves very easy, and you do this by making on curve points. And the curves you get from this are like smoothness is mathematically enforced, and. So that means you can do some interesting things like interpolation. So you can see that the curve around here is maintaining smoothness when these two points move. And it's adjusting the curve subtly to maintain that smoothness. This makes drawing very intuitive if you're trying to draw smooth curves, which you generally are with like this design. And he's got a Bezier converter which does optimize conversion to point forge. So I don't know if you can see this like this.
Is that good?
Oh, okay.
Good morning.
Yeah. Yeah. So the curves are now just regular Beziers, but the point placement is on the extremes where a typeface design would typically place them. That's important for doing hinting, having the vertical actually the vertical. And so if you zoom in this S button here, if you zoom into this S curve, then it's really hard to get that just right using Bezier. It's really difficult. And with Race Spyro, it's really easy.
And he's going to, isn't he going to put out something, some proprietary software too or something?
Okay, he was kind of thinking of, at the moment it's GTK and Cairo based, and it's got the Lean Style patenting, so he's got a software idea patent for this in the USA, and so you're free to implement it under the GPL, or you're free to pay him lots of money to make a non-GPL implementation. And that Race done that with a whole bunch of different stuff, it's given to the drivers more recently. And that's worked out very well for the software community, and it's worked out very well for Race as well. so that's kind of the proprietary angle on that. Now Race just got a job at Google, So he's very busy working on his earlier PhD, which was on trust metrics. And so that's kind of what he's doing. So he's not really that involved in the typeface stuff at the moment. What he is interested in is doing some kind of web-based application for font typeface design. And he's actually got a JavaScript canvas version of his Spyro curve drawing technology working. And I think I've got a copy of it somewhere on there.
Working on a web interface?
Yes.
That would be, you know, for projects like the Wen Quanyi project. Well, are you familiar with that one? Wen Quanyi is a project to create Chinese Hanzi, the complete repertoire of Plane 0 and Plane 1 Hanzi characters on a bitmap fonts. Because you need, because you can't, it's too difficult to hint Chinese.
Yeah.
On a computer screen, so you want to have human optimized bitmaps basically. Mm-hmm. And they're talking about doing vector stuff. Well, I'll talk about it a little later when we talk about Chinese font stuff.
There are some other projects going on, by the way.
Well, the CGK, we're going to talk about Arne Goethe's CGK.
Fontly.com is going to be where Ray and I are going to be kind of looking at that web-based application. There's a lot of stuff in there, a lot of ideas floating around, which we haven't really written down.
So that's Fontly, L-E-Y?
Fontly, it's in F-O-N-T-L-Y.
L-Y.
Yeah. And fontly.com/sandbox has got the, the breaking slide which Ray has made. So that's part of the presentation of the Legal Graphics meeting.
Yeah. And also the other thing that comes into play in the font design pipeline is now FontForge handles Python scripts, Python scripting. So because a lot of the type designers have been asking for that because they're used to it in FontLab and no one knows those tools. So it's just going to make it easier to script things for the complex fonts. I think that's going to mention for me for the presentation.
Do you want me to say a bit about that as well? About the Python stuff?
Yeah,
So with the proprietary typeface design world, that's mainly using the font lab. And one of the kind of big things from the font lab has been the type scripting, which comes from coming out of Holland. The Guido van Rossum, the
original recording
lab, his brother is a typeface designer. And that typeface designer's old brother is a kind of type, an old school type technologist, Peter Van Watkins. And he's quite famous in Dutch design for doing automated design. So he did some really crazy stuff, like putting like a set of AUX scripts with AUX Express 3 to do automated design type stuff. And so they were putting. They managed to get hold of the source code for Fontographer 3 in the 90s through their kind of connections in the typeface design community and add Python scripting to it. And this is like in the mid-90s when no one had really heard of Python. Fontographer then like died because the guy who wrote it sold his company to Macromedia, who stopped development of it. And there was like a switch from the Motorola chips to the IBM chips by Apple. So Fontographer 3 just stopped running. And so there was this gap in the market for proprietary typeface design application, which FontLab filled, which is first a Windows application and then is rewritten for the Mac. And so the Dutch typeface designers persuaded FontLab to put Python scripting in. And they, FontLab did that, but at quite a low level that wasn't really useful for doing typeface design. So the Dutch typeface designers created, they ported the higher level scripts that they got for what they call RoboFog, the Pythonized Fontographer, and they ported that to FontLab and called it RoboFan. So it's a kind of high level object model of what is a proper font. So you can actually do useful stuff easily using Python scripting. They've released RoboFan under a freeware license. So the FontLab licensed it, had to license it from them, which they did. So when you get a license for FontLab, you get RoboFan built in. But it's also available as freeware from their site, which is robofab.org. And so right now, there's been efforts to persuade George Williams, the author of FontForge, to add Python scripting to FontForge, so that RoboFab can be run atop FontForge as well as FontMap. And they're going to be releasing RoboFab under the BSD license, so it can be integrated with FontForge.
Yeah, there's a high level question here actually.
Yeah. Which is,
does this make any sense at all? You mentioned that one of you two guys mentioned that people were using Inkscape to edit glyphs and importing into FontForge. And the really sweet guy who wrote FontForge isn't here, but it seems in a world in which FontForge was the preferred open source font editor, then people will be saying, I love to edit my glyphs in FontForge. And when we hear that they aren't saying that, they're not using a specialized tool, but they're using a drawing program, presumably because it's easier to use.
Well, yeah, well, most people start with Inkscape, but a lot of people do use just FontForge.
Right. To draw. I mean, the question becomes, should in fact the right approach be to making FontForge easier to use? It's not impossible because the programmer has stated willingness, for example, to move to using GTK instead of his own toolkit that he uses now.
Let's clarify that.
That doesn't itself make it easier to use.
Well, actually, he would be interested to use Spyro in FontForge.
But that's where I'm going. Yeah, that's the thing that would be interesting.
George isn't so interested in GTK. He's not interested in Cairo.
Right.
Because.
I mean, he said he's willing to change, you know, is what I was trying to say.
Yeah. That's very much kind of what came at the LGM. Traditionally, he's been kind of unwilling to look into that because he's just not that interested.
Right.
With the stuff available in Cairo, especially, then he's more interested in modernizing OnForge. But the scripting stuff is important, because even if you do the drawing in another tool like Inkscape, the natural font production often needs scripting, because you're dealing with so many glyphs.
Oh no, I agree, but it's just not clear to me whether FontForge is the best base for it.
Well, actually, I guess to elaborate on what you're talking about, it seems to me that, you know, with a new tool like Spyro, it sounds like maybe getting Spyro into FontForge, that would be something that people would really like.
Yeah.
Especially if it's easy to get the curves right.
Mm-hmm. Well, what does it mean to get Spyro into FontForge?
Being able to use to draw those curves.
I mean, with the Spyro.
Getting the curves into FontForge.
Getting that image on the background and just drawing on the outsides of that.
I'm sorry, I can't really hear. See?
That you put just the background on the picture of the letter on the background, and you just draw along the outline of the cliff.
Right.
And it's. Makes those nice spirals.
No, I mean, I've used Spyro, I agree with you, but I'm just trying to... Okay.
So Spyro is really the curve technology, and there are some prototypes. There's a GTK1, a GTK2, there's a... I think it's Carbon. There's a Mac OS X bundle with a great name. And then there's this web-based one, which is pretty good. Rafe has been in touch with the lib2geon guys about getting Spyro into lib2geon. And one of the guys in that project, I don't know so much about this group, who it is, but one of the guys in lib2geon is working on a Google Summer of Code style project to actually move lib2geon along a bit quicker. But I'm not sure about the details about that. And that's probably how Spyro technology is probably going to be seen first in Inkscape as part of lib2geon integration. And obviously that library will also be open to George Williams or FontForge. That's probably how that integration is going to go down.
I wonder if anyone has proposed adding these curves into SVG.
I don't think so.
Yeah, so actually creating getting Rafe's curve technology integrated directly into, you mean the SVG?
SVG spec. We publish the SVG spec, we own it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, I mean...
Well, and what about...
We can change it.
Yeah, yeah. The other thing is...
It's not instant, because we're a standards organisation, and we move about as quickly as the Church of England, but faster than the Church of Rome, so it's okay.
Well, the other thing is, they're also, when you look at, like, the SVG font spec...
Yes.
That's not really... There's not enough there yet.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, for example, in an OpenType font, you could have... let's say, you have base characters with diacritics, right? And so your base character, you draw that curve once, and then you... all the diacritics you just add by reference, right?
Unfortunately, there's a reason why SVG fonts are not open type. That's a two-word reason. It's software patents.
That's the only reason. But SVG font technology...
...on SVG. Or there's papers on the techniques needed to use SVG as fonts.
I'm sorry, is that a question or a statement?
It's a question. Where
are the names? Oh, no, I didn't say that. SVG itself does not use open type. SVG has its own font format built in. It doesn't, and it allows embedding of other fonts, but it does not particularly talk about open type fonts, and it does not allow open. It does not endorse in any particular way open type or true type because of software patents, which mean that in order to implement open type fully, you need a patent license. And the holders of those patents, which are, for the most part, Apple and Microsoft, do not grant royalty-free licenses in general to people
but
that implementation. So we can't have it listed.
Yeah, but what, I guess, okay.
So there are some aspects we could have.
Excuse me for having made reference to OpenType, but the idea that you have a base glyph.
Yeah.
And then you have a set of, let's say, diacritics or other stuff that you add on to that glyph.
Right.
By reference. So you only have, I mean, SVG font spec, as I understand it, currently doesn't permit that, right? Where you could refer to a base glyph or a curve for the base consonant or a vowel, and then have the diacritics. Yeah, to compose a new glyph by reference to two previously existing glyphs that have glyph indices somewhere else.
That actually can.
That doesn't mean.
But not
in use. That's not the character number. It's a glyph number. So that glyph then represents a single character in Unicode.
I understand. And in fact, well, I think what will happen, SVG and XSL are going to be working together over the next couple of years to produce an XSLFO 2.0 and an SVG. I don't know what the new SVG will be called. SVG 2.0 probably, but I don't know. And the text handling of SVG will be enhanced hugely.
Okay.
So
will be
what? Enhanced, improved.
Okay.
And at that point, we will be looking at how much open type integration we can do, including things like referencing open type features, and including things like kerning and composite glyph support, in a much better way. But you're right, it's not all there now.
Can we talk, especially about features?
Yes, maybe we should make everyone else listen.
Later.
Yes.
Later.
I just.
Okay, so anything else you wanted to add, Dennis, about, or Ben, about?
Well, the presentation was really
short. To go all the way back to Deja Vu,
yeah.
I have one more question for you. Because, of course, Jim Gettys and Keith Packard and I descended on Bitstream one day,
yes.
A few years ago, as Dave Croston knows, and arranged for Bitstream Vera to happen, to be licensed. And I was very pleased to run into John Collins at TypeCon last year in Boston, who told me quietly, and I've not been that quiet about it, I don't care, that Bitstream, he didn't tell me to be quiet about it, but he told me quietly, that Bitstream Vera is one of their best-selling fonts.
Yeah.
All right. I've spoken to URW people who would not, in fact, come out and say that, but they said donating the 35 fonts to the GoScript project had worked very well for them from a financial perspective. So maybe what we need to do is go back to Bitstream and say, what would it take to have Jim Lyons, the Vera designer, approve these new glyphs and make a new release of Vera? Or can we make the Vera project be more open in some way?
Actually,
right,
well, that would be.
I think they talked about it, but it seems that they want more money. To
well, who is the they who have talked?
Yeah. I don't know.
Did you get Jim and Keith to go back?
Grom Foundation.
I'm sorry?
It was people from the Grom Foundation.
So that was probably Jim and Keith then, yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't me, but.
Jim, which Jim?
Gettys.
Jim Gettys.
Oh, Jim Gettys.
Yes. Okay, kind of like Getty Tab, but. Okay.
Yeah, we definitely be interested to have a review of
yeah, okay.
From this term,
And he's occasionally, he has been on the GNOME Foundation board. He's on the GNOME Foundation, as am I. Yeah.
Okay. Did you guys have anything else that you wanted to add?
When you have fonts, you want them on the screen, you have to align the outlines nicely to the pixels, so that's causing anything.
That's the biggest issue in free fonts, is that it's really hard to. It's quite easy to design a font, and then the hardest part is to make it optimized for the screen. So we like good tools for that.
unfortunately not many good tools exist yet. And we basically write the two type instructions in Deja Vu ourselves, which is a very low programming language. So there are a few tools we can use, like Scratchfit, tries to put it all in XML file, and Scratchfit, but I have them.
So can I ask you a question about the hinting here? Now, this is true type hinting, the patented true type hinting, which the free type interpreter normally, which is normally shut off in most Linux distributions.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
It's half right.
So you're okay. So I mean, I'm just asking that. So I'm just asking. I mean, I understand as font designers that you want to make your fonts available to everyone on all platforms, but I mean, I guess I'm just asking the question: is it an issue that you have to invest a lot of time to do the hinting, which really only benefits one platform, users of one platform? Is that
and printers?
Printing doesn't mean.
One thing I don't like is FreeTime, but the other thing is that we all get bugs from the author games that might be from FreeTime, and we cannot see.
I'm sorry, you couldn't hear
it. We have the author games in FreeTime, which tries to do out hinting themselves.
Auto hinting, yeah.
But we get all the bugs from it almost in our fonts. So, basically, the first thing when we get a bug from this clip doesn't look good is see if it's the auto hinter first.
Yeah.
And that's kind of frustrating sometimes, because the code is there, it's in the font, it's supposed to look much better, but because we can't use it for the patterns.
But isn't it David Turner recently said that it's 2009 and the corresponding patent for that expires, and then we might have
fresh patterns?
There are multiple patents, actually. I think some have already expired, and there are still some to go. But I think that's about right.
But I think
1989, so 20 years. 1989 was the main year that TrueType was released, so that's about right.
The thing is, it's not really. I mean, it's not only useful for people on one platform, because there are a lot of Linux distributions who are actually turn the bytecode interpreter on. So.
Right.
Which ones are interested?
Ubuntu ships it on and off.
Ubuntu
definitely ships it on.
Yeah.
Fedora doesn't.
But it, you can
turn
it on yourself.
Mandriva ships it off. Mandriva ships it off, but you can enable the non-free repository, and then it turns on.
Sure, Ubuntu ships it on. There's an Ubuntu repository
that's
just
one. So is that legal for them to do that?
I think it's all on my interpretation.
So maybe that,
yep. Whether it's legal or not depends on in a given country. It depends on whether the patent holder in that country gives you permission or refuses permission, or so it's conceivable that it's
legal. That it's legal in some country, not legal.
I
remember the original page on the FreeType website said something, basically said, we're not sure, but this might be illegal, and use it here.
So usually that means, but that for distributors like SUSE and people like that, that usually is enough for them to turn it off.
Yeah.
Right? Just like with the DVD, encryption stuff, it's enough for them. Their lawyers are basically telling them, you don't want to go there. It's fine as an individual for you to turn it on, but if you're a company distributing and selling this stuff, you don't want to have to deal with it legally. So,
I guess there's two sides. I mean, there's multiple sides to this. One is that there's actually multiple hinting technologies in the world. Adobe's OpenType fonts are not subject to patent, for example.
Okay.
It's worth remembering. Another's because they use Type 1 outlines. OpenType actually allows two kinds of font outlines. They both have hinting.
It isn't.
And one kind is patent and one isn't.
Okay.
Yep.
There's the plus and minus.
So that's one. We've had three technologies of font hinting, primarily in the history of fonts, digital fonts. And the tendency over time, Microsoft took the declarative fonts, the declarative hinting that Adobe did with Type 1 was designed to be something that would appeal to a typeface designer. It's the same kind of way you think. You say, this is a vertical stem, so do vertical stem hinting. There's two problems with it. One is that it doesn't work very well for CJK fonts, for Han and Kanji, which have a lot of diagonals, and it doesn't have a way of saying this is a radical. And there are some things you can't easily do that you can do in TrueType, if you're the right kind of you. So what Microsoft and Apple did is they were trying to fight Adobe, and they needed to make it harder to make cheap fonts. And they needed to have something that was visibly different from Type 1. So they had TrueType, because Adobe wouldn't refuse to license Type 1 to
cheaply.
At one point they refused at all, but basically they would refuse to license it cheaply enough. Microsoft refused, cheaply enough was more than zero though. For Microsoft, they weren't willing to pay royalty.
Yeah, but they needed fonts. I was at the conference where they announced that they were...
Oh, the Siebel conference in 89, and Jorn, it was in tears.
He had tears in his eyes when he
Yeah.
So Adobe had to capitulate. By the time they capitulated, they'd already designed TrueType, and it was too late. And so we have... But TrueType has this hinting. The Windows core fonts took 100 person years to do the hinting.
Yeah.
Right, and there's not many fonts there. It's hard work. The other technology I know of, which is now basically dead, but could be revived, but is basically dead, was one where an afternoon's work was described to me as equivalent to about 2 weeks of a senior programmer doing TrueType hinting. But that technology failed again because it was owned by it was the companies that pushed it didn't push it in the right way. Mm-hmm. Again, money. And hinting, that was Folio and F3 hinting. But F3 was designed in conjunction with Marasawa Corporation in Japan, and it was designed to do CJK fonts very efficiently. It's much more efficient than TrueType, and it can do hinting of rotated glyphs. And it's declarative, so type designers liked it. But it's basically dead because no one supports it. There is something to be said both with these new curves and with other forms of hinting, I think. There is something to be said for the idea of Linux having its own font format. The downside is we actually want to make it possible for people to go to a major type designer and buy a font and use it. If Richard Stallman were here, he might disagree, I don't know. I've had some conversations with him on this, but sparks flying.
Well, you can have that.
Okay, in a sec, yeah, I would like you to. But at the moment, I think, it's just important for us. We have to be seen to respect the intellectual property rights of other people if we're going to be taken seriously. An advantage of having our own font format is A, that we control it. We don't have font patency. B, that it can be higher quality and closer to how people think.
When you say our own font format, what you really mean is to have an open standard. An open standard for a font format that can be used on any platform.
Right.
Not just Linux.
No.
Because it would, in fact, if it existed, in fact, it would get it. If it was existed, it would
get widely adopted. Yes.
It would get widely adopted on.
The only important thing is who controls it, and can you do as best as you can to guarantee that it can be freely implemented.
Well, if it's an open standard.
In other words, an open standard can still have patents.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So that's.
You want some.
You do the best you can.
Well, and then you have things like...
Potentially, I'm not actually trying to push the W3C platform. I'm trying to push it.
Potentially open, but isn't really...
Really, yeah.
Yeah, open type isn't very open.
Right. There's just so much that's in the Windows implementation that's not in their specs.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a problem.
And then when you ask questions, my impression of the responses I get to the questions I ask about their spec is, what are you, stupid? Why don't you just know?
Yeah.
I get better responses than that, but a lot of it's about who you know, unfortunately, and it shouldn't be. That's not open either. Because the downside is ideally we'd like a world of interoperability. And that's...
Right. And the sad thing, in a way, is that there are people at Microsoft who seem to care about that.
There are.
Yeah, but since
I know some of them.
Well, they're probably stifled
by anyway.
Oh, they're getting interoperability from Windows Vista, Windows 98, Windows 2K, Windows 64, and Windows 32. When you start talking about interoperability between Windows and the other major operating system, which is OS X, then they'll talk about their agreements with Apple, and they do work together. It's, for some of them, we are on the planet, and for some of them, Linux is on the planet. For some, it isn't. And if there's any other operating systems on the planet other than those three, well, actually, they do acknowledge the existence of Solaris, but beyond that, it's pretty difficult. Mm-hmm. And that's reality. You know, that's okay.
So we're getting on close on 10:30 here. Should we look at? We have a few other lightning talks we're going to talk about too. What else do you need to put in there? And Ben, do we this presentation that you have up here?
This one is made by Nicholas Spanning and by me. Just received it this night, I think.
And we don't have this. This isn't yet up on the web.
No, both of them on the web.
Okay.
There's been many more tools, but
it was also mentioned a couple of Perl modules that can handle DTF format or OpenType format. So these can also be used for scripting. As an alternative, maybe if you wrote a tab or Python from Forge.
Oh, okay. Sorry,
yeah, you're going to put this on the
wiki.
Okay.
Okay. So can I have?
That was a bit quick.
There's a two couple questions I have actually. First, I wanted to go back and ask one more question about Spyro. When Spyro converts to FontForge Beziers, it converts them to PostScript type PS type 1.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And
that would be my assumption, but
yeah.
I thought I'd better ask.
So it does. There's two steps. The first step is it just converts it to Beziers in a lazy way, where it just goes pop 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 on the curve, going down points. And then there's a generic PostScript Bezier optimizer, which is quite CPU intensive and does the optimization.
You just showed, I know you went through that really quickly, Ben, a bunch of slides. There was something there about Fonty Python. Do you guys have any? Fonty Python is a Python based font management tool for Linux. Have you guys used it at all, and how good is it?
Well, it's pretty good in the sense that you can organize your fonts in collections and decide to enable a collection or disable it. So it pretty much just installs or removes them from the .fonts directory you have. But that kind of conflicts with the regular font installation system, because if you install a font and then you just remove the font in Python, then there's a conflict, because for the default installation system, it's still there.
It thinks it's still there.
What do you mean by default installation
like
system?
Like a dev package or a YAML or whatever. If you install a font through a package.
I see what you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's only if you're a root user with Python. So other than that, it works very well. For people who have thousands of fonts, if they just want to use a couple for a project, they can quickly switch between collections.
Okay. I asked you because I'm going to talk. One of the lightning talks down here is this thing called Fontima, which is just mostly just an idea. There's not a whole lot of code there yet, but I have some. So I'll talk about that in a minute. But it's an idea for a font manager that would be more tightly integrated into a Linux system at some point if it ever gets written.
Yeah, because FontiPython just removes itself fonts really, so okay. It doesn't change anything in the application's fonts, like there's.
Right. So did anybody else have other questions for open font tools update?
There's a kind of philosophical thing about free software nature of fonts, because fonts are on the one hand technical, functional software, and on the other hand it's like an artistic work, like an MP3 file or a photo that you might download. And so the question about what are the appropriate freedoms for fonts is an open debate. And Richard Stallman makes a distinction between three kinds of works in general, between functional works, artistic works, and works of opinion. And you might be familiar with this if you do free documentation license Debian policy, because the free software, the free documentation license distinguishes between functional text and opinion text. So the front and back cover text of a manual can be considered as work of opinion, your dedication, blah blah blah, it's kind of your opinion. Whereas the actual meat of the book, which is functional about how the software works, to say it's a software manual, is function information which users ought to be able to have the freedom to update. Whereas your work of opinion, maybe it's not good for society, work of opinion to be more violent. So with fonts, which are artistic work, maybe, then if it's seen as an artistic work, then just having freedom to redistribute it non-commercially is kind of a base freedom for artistic works, is what Richard says. So Creative Commons have recently deprecated their non-sharing licenses, and so Richard's now supporting Creative Commons again. And so for display fonts, then he says that that's okay. If a font is like a fun display thing you might use on the front cover of a book design, then just having it as redistributable freeware is acceptable. Whereas if it's a text font, which you'd use for some kind of, which has a functional purpose, then you require more freedoms because it's functional. And the distinction is about social use. Even though there's no technical distinction between a display font.
This is part of the justification the US Copyright Office used for not allowing copyright of fonts. Sounds similar to that, that they're functional. And the Copyright Office said because they're functional, they actually have no real artistic value, and therefore they shouldn't be copyrighted. And there was a political subtext behind that, which many people have forgotten, of course, which was that they're also ammunition. Fonts are ammunition. That is to say, in the 18th century, when the insurgency happened, which the US remembers today, today being Insurgents Day, otherwise known as Independence Day, depending on which side you look at it from, a group of anti-government upstarts and terrorists committed acts of violence. When they formed a new government, rejecting the proper legal government, and they suddenly discovered that for their propaganda to tell us, they wanted to do this constitution thing, and they wanted to print it, and they didn't own any fonts. There were no type designers in the US at that time. There was one in Canada, but there were none in the US. And so they couldn't make their own fonts legally, if they respected copyright. So they said, screw this, you can't copyright our fonts. That's because they're ammunition. They were very important. They were considered as an important thing. They had to start a new country. You had to have fonts, and all the existing typeface designs were European for Western fonts. So they stole them and said, there's no copyright. And then that was, the justification was later invented.
Yeah.
So there's a political subtext here, but I think it's...
But there's an open debate about whether fonts are functional, which
right.
The US originally said they were completely functional, whether they're completely autistic, or whether, what the balance is here. It's kind of a tricky question.
Right.
I mean, there's a kind of smart ass answer, which is to say it's like a quantum superstate, it's both at the same time. but that's kind of a smart ass answer, it doesn't really help. So this is kind of academic. It's kind of an academic discussion. Because having pretty free software fonts is really what's.
I mean, it's sufficient. It is sufficient for us to have some fonts we consider are free in order to do text layout. Mm-hmm. Right, it doesn't. That, the existence of fonts that may or may not be free over here doesn't affect our ability to use the fonts over here. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think, we also have to be. But in practice, we have to be aware because users want to use both sets of fonts.
Right, and so that's right. So in terms of trying to support people using not fully free fonts, then that's by as far as original installment is concerned, then that's
I think. It's fine to respect Richard Stallman's opinion, but there's a wider world out there too, and I think it's perfectly legitimate for graphic artists and people who want to buy and use proprietary fonts to do so. So
I've never heard him say they should not do that.
Yeah, I don't. I'm sure he wouldn't. Yeah. I'm sure. I don't. I'm not saying he would. Yeah.
One of the interesting corner cases that we've run into with putting smarts into fonts is that you can, for say, freely redistribute font X, Y, always marks, gives great design. You want to add smart font technology to it. Some font licenses seem to come close to prohibiting inserting extra tables into the font. Some don't. But there's one, the question, there's also a case of if you can license this font legally from Bitstream. Do you have permission to insert tables if you have a smart font capability? Say, for instance, you've got an Arabic font and you want to customize it to a dialect that has different behavior. You need to go to the spot and you need to add a lot of smarts.
So this is something that SIL has encountered with?
It's a potential issue that we've considered. I don't think we've actually gone into it as a blocking issue.
Yeah, because
I wonder how often you can actually do that without having to modify the glyphs or add glyphs, too.
Sometimes you can do it a lot of the way. I mean, there's a dozen cases in Cambodia where they use the national differentoire, but the behavior and the orthography are quite different. It depends, possibly to a large degree, it depends on the cultural basis. I think in Indic scripts, you can do that more often, perhaps you could say it, but it's something we've had to consider. Fortunately, in the cases where we need these things, we tend to design them on our own base anyway, so we're largely bypassing that, but it's a point that's worth considering for the wider world.
But that's because that's what I was thinking in the back of my mind, that SIL, in fact, is designing your own fonts and putting them under the OFL license, and so you don't have too much of an issue, really.
There's a few cases where it would be nice to use the pre-existing fonts, but in many cases the people we design the fonts for have specific concepts of what is legible that isn't necessarily related to the pre-existing fonts that are available.
Right.
Yeah. So we've actually heard our fonts put together simply because the community was designed for a different concept of what we asked for the text from the book.
Wait, I'm sorry, did you say the Scheherazade font?
The Scheherazade was designed specifically because the community, their ideas about what made large amounts of Arabic text legible differed from the fonts that we could gain easy access to. The ones that we would have bought, I think there may have been some that might have been suitable, but they were under pretty restrictive. Expensive.
Yeah. So, and when you say the community here, this is.
I don't know which one it was. I know that we had reasons to design it ourselves.
You had reasons to design it yourself. Okay.
But I can't say I can't remember which one. Yeah. But we got a lot of feedback and tweets and it drove off the distraction.
We wanted this. Okay. Actually, we liked it better.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's always a problem because. Your users often don't know exactly what they want.
It's actually a problem that has also occurred in the past with licenses of fonts that do auto-hinting. If you're using a font editing program, there have been font editing programs that create auto-hints. Yeah. And then you've got software whose licensing is not necessarily clear. It's not necessarily the case you can take their hinting code and apply it to other fonts. And that's been something that's been an issue in the past.
Okay, let's, if it's okay, in the interest of time, let's move on. So on from the schedule here, we talked about OFL font update. Was that what really you guys were talking about? I thought it was OFL tool. That was the toolkit update, right?
Yeah. I'll give a quick update on OFL fonts, but I think you should do one of yours first.
You want me to do? Okay. Well, I'll do IPA font update. This is very short. When I was at the desktop architects meeting a few weeks ago in Mountain View, I spoke with Hiroshi Miura, who is with the Information Technology Promotion Agency in Japan, which is IPA. And the IPA fonts have been bundled with open printing drivers and with, I believe, with GRASS, which is the open geographic information system. So, the license of those fonts, so these are Japanese, right, Japanese fonts, right? The license has not been very clear, and so I know people like Mike Fabian, who's with Novell Sousa in Germany, and others have, you know, inquired repeatedly with IPA, could you please clarify the license? And if you actually read the text of the license, which is in Japanese, it's really not very clear. So anyway, Hiroshi Miura told me that they, I guess, are now going to clarify this license, so the IPA fonts will be released under some sort of limited usage license, and they're going to have a press release and release these fonts at the end of this year. That's the information I have. I think that's right.
Just to clarify, IPA in this case doesn't mean International Phonetic Alphabet.
No, it means IPA means, IPA stands for Information Dash Technology Promotion Agency in Japan. IPA.
Okay.
So this is, so if you are interested in CJK fonts on the free desktop, then you would might be familiar with these IPA fonts. But it has nothing to do with the International Phonetic Alphabet.
Thank you for that. That was my assumption.
Yeah. So,
when you say they'd be under a limited usage license?
Yeah, I don't know what this means either. Right? So here's the notes I took on my little card, and I had asked Hiroshi Miura to send me a you know, a set of slides, and I don't believe that he did so. So for this to present here. Because I knew he wouldn't be able to come here, but I'd asked him for, you know, to send me a talk or a set of slides or something, and I would present it. So he wasn't able to do that. Okay, so that's the IPA font update. So a couple other items on here are IMBus and then Fontima. I could do IMBus if you, Simon, could you get the presentation up on the... If you could do it on your computer, then I'll just stand up there and go through it.
Sure. Where is it?
So these are... So it's if you go to unifont.org/textlayout2007.
This?
2007, yeah, just like that. Text layout with a capital T and capital L. Yeah, and then
this one?
James Su. So, do you folks know James Su? He's the author of Skim. Skim is the input method engine that is used commonly on the free desktop. So
So again, the way we've got, the reason I have this presentation today is, again, because I was in California a few weeks ago in Mountain View, and James Su was there. James Su now works for Google in Beijing. He used to work for Novell, I believe.
Almost everybody works for Google.
Yeah, it seems.
They have like five people on my way.
So if you're, you know, trying to input Japanese or Chinese or Korean or any other number of languages, you need a more than just a keyboard layout. And so input method engines serve that purpose. And Skim, James Su wrote Skim, which is what's currently available, and it's quite good. And this is his next generation input method framework. And he told me that he has not had very much time to work on this because now he's very busy with Google. So I think this is a downside. You know, if you get hired at Google, then this is not necessarily good. Right. It's probably good for your career, but maybe not good for your work on in the free software world. So could I go on to the next slide? I'll go through these really quickly. Let's go on next. So Skim. So these are, remember, I don't even know what any AOSS stands for. Yeah, so Hiroshi Miura is also, this is the IDA that we just talked about. Alright, I'll let you read through these. And we'll go over, let's go on to the next slide. Alright, so the current situation is there are many different input method protocols and frameworks for developers. There's XIM, IIMF. Skim, which is really quite good, but there it does have issues. And then there's UIM, which is coming out of the M17N
project, right? M17N can be used also from Skim.
Yeah, M17N can also be used with Skim. And there are many different, I'm not sure what it says down here, is it?
XIM, JPEG, IMOBILE, and
yeah, many different APIs for application developers. All right, next slide. The new approach that James Su is looking at is inspired from the design of DBus. It's written in pure C to avoid compatibility issues. Object-oriented, extensible. It's compatible with XKB. It's modularized, I think is what he means here. It's platform and graphic interface independent, and supports almost all the requirements of existing input engines and applications. So there's one daemon for per desktop session, and then the applications talk to the daemon. The IMVest daemon then forwards events between components, maintains state, and then the bus components, IMBus components, including input method engines, applications, and so on. And they communicate with each other by talking to the daemon. And they're asynchronous using Unix main sockets.
Do you have any idea why he decided to make another application instead of using just, for example, Venus?
Well, that's a good question. I think we should ask. Okay. We have to ask him. I don't know.
Okay,
So, right. That's a good question. I'll ask him that. Okay. Let's see. Oh, we did that one already, right?
That's amazing.
Okay, so, yeah, events and event roles of the component. I'm going to go through this really quickly because I think we're focused. This is just going to be a lightning talk. So this is available on the web if people are interested in all the gory details. Let's go on. Yeah, again, I'm going to assume that most of us in this room, you know, if you want to get into it, go ahead and take a look. I think think it's very interesting that he's working on a new input method engine, and it's something that is needed. But I don't think we have the time to go into all the details. So finally, he's working on this, and he's hoping to release a prototype at the end of this year. But he told me that he's quite busy working at Google, so I'm not sure whether it will happen or not. And that's it. Any questions about that? So, as I said, it's available on the website, and you're free to communicate with James directly if you have questions. I will ask him that one question. That's the question. Okay, let me see. The next talk, then, I was going to talk about Fontima. And so this was just, so that's also a presentation that's on the web. If we go back to the site there.
First of the slides?
Let's just do this real quick. This is, you're not going to be able to tell me yet. It's just a
web page.
The first one is just a web page. So some of you may remember last year, I think I talked about this last year at the Text Layout Summit about having a better way of displaying which fonts were available, for example, in a graphical user interface, right? If I had a drop down, it would be nice to have a sort of a smart font drop down list that was customized for fonts, where fonts were categorized into collections based on any sorts of different criteria. This is just one possibility, right? Where you might have, especially if you're a graphic artist, you might want to have all sorts of black letter fonts grouped together and script fonts grouped in another category if you're Western company. And then maybe you want to do the same thing, with the Chinese fonts. And this, I think, is actually very not a good division here, because it shows. Here it says Chinese fonts, and then it says Jianzi versus the Fangtianzi, which would be the simplified versus the traditional fonts. And actually, I think that's not a good division, because in the new world, Unicode world, you should just have fonts. You shouldn't be it shouldn't be necessary for you to have to select between a simplified Chinese font and a traditional Chinese font. Most modern commercial Chinese fonts are going to have both simplified and traditional characters in them.
But you might prefer one over another.
Does
seem to be very common.
I mean, sure, if you're in mainland China, you're going to be required to use
simplified Chinese.
Yeah. Simplified Chinese. Unless, of course, you're doing a lot of advertising work where you're selling your products in Hong Kong and Singapore and the rest of the world, in which case, in fact, you're going to need to use traditional fonts too.
Or if you're in Hong Kong, you probably need both. What I meant was, if you use these typefaces, you may well say, I prefer this one for simplified, and I prefer this one for traditional, even though both of them, in fact, have both glyph sets.
You could do that.
It's not crazy.
This is still a legitimate way of categorizing.
Right, it's not crazy.
But after I did that later, I thought that, that's not probably the best or most intuitive way of categorizing. So anyway, that was the idea of that. So then what I thought about doing is creating a library which would allow a library which would not have any connection to any graphical user interface, neither GTK nor Qt, but would be simply a set of classes and that you could use as a foundation for building a font management framework for the free desktop. So that was the idea. So rather than look at this now, let's go to the slides where you can see. So if you go now to the, so you can download that if you want. That's an so that was the font that I had make up, and that, and then I think, you know, this library, if I write it, will not be just to support a font dialog or prompt list like this, but to support all kinds of font management activities that you can imagine on the free desktop. So let's just look at what I was thinking of.
And one quick comment on that. I wouldn't personally mix the left to right and right to left like that. I think the menu should all be laid out one way or the other, depending on some other UI preference.
Well, of course, Eric, you're intelligent. And my opinion was that if I had Arabic fonts, that it would be most natural for my Arabic fonts to appear with names in Arabic, which is a problem right now. You know, you tend to have the names in Latin script, and then the menu would just naturally drop out that way. And it really would be a problem, because if I was an Arabic, let's say I'm a graphic artist in the Middle East, so I'm going to be using Latin fonts and I'm going to be using Arabic fonts, right? And when I do my advertising work for clients in the Middle East, and they want their advertisements in using Arabic, then I mean this is what I would want to see, you know. And then when I do Latin work, you know, for Western stuff, this is probably what I want to see there. So I mean, I don't know. We have to
personally, it's a bit jarring to see the layout change in the middle of the menu.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. As I said, in fact, what I want to do is actually not write the graphical user interface, because I get bored. Any kind of graphical user interface stuff, I get kind of bored with. I'm not really interested in that. What I like to do is, so let's go on to the next slide. And I would like feedback on this, because in fact, I've just written skeletal classes in C++. So my idea was I would write this in C++. And I'm just kind of thinking about it as an idea. So I would appreciate feedback if people think this is a good idea or a bad idea. And then we can move forward from there. So the idea would be, you know, at the top level you have a class. So now these are all, you can think of these as C++ classes. Right? Have a font collection manager, which would contain a set. So when I think of set here, I mean, you can just think of this as an STL set. It could be some other thing. Let's just say it's an STL set. So font collection manager consists of a set of font collections, right? And then the next slide, a font collection itself consists of a set of font families, right? And so a font collection could be either something that the system, it could be like an auto collection, right? Where the system says, oh, you have a bunch of CJK fonts on your system. So I'm going to create an auto collection of all your CJK fonts. Oh, you have a bunch of Arabic fonts. I'm going to create a collection of all of your Arabic fonts. Oh, you have a bunch of Latin fonts. I'm going to create a collection of all your Latin fonts. So those would be, that would be one set of font collections. But another set of font collections would be, oh, I'm a graphic artist, and I'm doing a project for a perfume company. And so I'm going to do a bunch of advertisements. And so I want to get a set of fonts. So I want to be able to like drag and drop. You know, I have 3,000 fonts on my machine. And okay, I want to get these. Let's say it's a worldwide advertising project, right? And so I want to get these nice script fonts for Latin. And now, oh, for my Japanese, I want to get this Piccolo font for Japanese. You know, because I'm going to be advertising perfume, right? So I'm going to throw these fonts out of my big collection of 3,000, I'm going to pick 10 or 12 fonts and stick them into a collection, you know, a user-defined collection. So that's the kind of functionality that I would be wanting as a graphic artist, right? And so this would support that as well, right? So the font families, of course, font families then have individual faces in them, sets of. Yeah, then a font face is, maybe it's just a wrapper around a free type face, but I'm working in C++, so I have some sort of wrapper for that. Also, the font face has Unicode values, and a font face has a set of supported scripts, and this is capitalized because this is another class. Next one. Yeah. Font file is a font file. Font library is wrapped around FT library. These are just other classes. Script. So then a script. Would then contain a set of orthographies, right? So, for example, Latin, if my font supported Vietnamese, let's say I had a Latin font, right? And so it can support a lot of different orthographies. Does it support Vietnamese or not? Well, only if it has a certain set of diacritic marks and so on, or pre-composed characters for Vietnamese. Then, if it did, and presumably the system would detect all this stuff, just the way font config does, right? Then it would have a container orthography object for that, for Vietnamese, right? So yeah, orthography contains a set of Unicode values. And then there would be other things that would be nice to have in an orthography object, because again, I'm thinking of wanting to present some additional information to the user, right? Like, I would probably have a vector of sample characters, right? So if that, if this was Vietnamese, then I would probably want to show a set of some of the Vietnamese characters that have diacritical marks on them.
Have you looked at the CLDR at all? CLDR, Common Locale Data Repository.
Oh, CLDR. Yeah, not at all.
Yeah, because one of the things that it has is it has a list of exemplar characters.
Okay, so
just all the characters used to write that language, basically.
Yeah. And this would be probably not all the characters, but just drill it down to a subset of maybe 10, which would you, so that if I was highlighting that font with a mouse, maybe I could have a tooltip pop-up in my user interface that would now show exactly what that font looks like and show some of those example characters. Or the other thing that people like to see sometimes when you're choosing a font is to see a pangram, right? Like in English you say,
packing my box with 5 dozen liquor jugs.
Yeah.
Excellence in typography, if you want to be traditional. That's the middle case, sorry. Yeah. That's the middle of the paper,
right.
Sorry.
So, yeah. And then, of course, for some scripts, like CGK, you wouldn't really have a pangram. Like, for CGK, maybe the first couple lines of the 1,000-character classic, or
you have the Tito Hum.
Yeah, something like that.
Yep, I think that's the last.
So that's just the idea. Very straightforward class hierarchy. And if people have any questions about that, let me know.
Yeah,
I'd like to do something.
One thing I wonder off the top of my head is if just the notion of language in kind of the same sense it's used in CLDR would be useful instead of or along with orthography. I mean, I'd have to think about that some, but. Because generally, a given language is written all in one way, so...
That's not true. I mean, look at, modern Mongolian. It's written in either Cyrillic or in traditional Mongolian script.
Yeah, but in CLDR, that there's ways to identify a language, and part of the identifier is the script it's used to write.
Yeah, that's not the way I identify my language.
So I would just say...
Well, I guess I have to defer to the experts.
Titan has 3 extant scripts that are used for now.
Pardon?
Titan.
It's very common in Southeast Asia for there to be
3 scripts. Northern Thai has got at least 2.
Uses the same time? Or?
Yeah. We've produced, we've published works that have got Lara on one page for a Northern Thai, but Northern Thai
borrows
exactly Thai scripts.
Oh, yeah, somebody else's.
Yeah, Thai scripts on the right. The Thai Dan community, they all speak the same language, but each of the 3 communities uses a different script.
It's a different script and kind of the Unicode sense of what is a script, then, language country script, is that not enough to identify a given orthography?
I'll try to
that'll probably, well, yes and no.
There's already a standard for that, and if it's sufficient, it should probably be used.
Well, it's a version standard. BCP 47 has been published by the ITF, for example, and is Unicode.
Language and script together, probably enough in the country, and I'm just ambiguous where appropriate, but. It's just to say that actually languages with more than one script are a lot more common.
Oh, sure. I mean, there are lots of languages that some of them,
because one of the languages written in either Cyrillic or Latin.
Yeah.
But
you can't identify one from the other. You need both to actually nail it down.
And then there's Japanese, which is with three squares all at once.
Yes.
Four squares. If you can call Latin.
Something like maybe.
I think Japanese needs to add some more scripts. They're not using enough.
Need a Cyrillic transcription of Japanese.
Japanese characters that just contain Greek and Kyrillic also.
Oh, Greek also, yeah.
Yeah. So that means that you use that character sometimes officially.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah. Right.
Not as a word, not for writing Greek or but as a simple, kind of symbol.
Yeah, like for mathematics or symbols in chemistry or something, right?
Yeah. So it's very difficult to identify how many scripts each language uses.
Do we have another laptop that we can... Seaman has to go to the... Do we have another laptop that can be plugged into the cable?
Not today.
So the other things that we have here on the top to talk about this morning were, I think a really interesting discussion that we wanted to have is this issue of pan-Unicode fonts. What I wanted to do before we did that is to briefly talk about Arne Goetsch's CJK Unifont project outlook, and there are slides for that which I can go through very, very quickly. I don't want to take a lot of time on them. We can just turn it back into a lightning talk. Just to point out that this is something that's up and coming that will help solve one of the problems with CJK fonts on the free desktop. Does that sound okay, Ben? So should I go over that real quickly and then we'll turn it over to you for the discussion? What's that?
Take the time you want.
I'm sorry?
Take the time you want for it.
Oh, I wanted to go quickly because I want to have time for the discussion.
I think he's saying if you hadn't asked and just done it, it would have taken less time, but I think, on the other hand, the building consensus is value, so.
This is still the workout concept here.
You want to talk about this right now?
Yes, quickly.
Go ahead. So we're going to talk about the OFL fonts, and Daniel will describe that.
No,
Yeah, I guess we. Yeah, I already know why freedoms are important. Yeah, Nicholas just wanted to go for a days. The UFL is an important form license. Well, yeah, that this is basically the thing that over the past while a lot more open funds have been released. There are a few of them have been released by SIL, but what?
It's GSSD.
I'll get to that. But it's now not just that. The UFL, the Open Font License, has been created by SIL for open fonts, but it isn't just SIL that are creating fonts. The GFS is the Greek Font Society, and they are now releasing a lot of Greek fonts under the UFL. A lot of them are the historical fonts from previous centuries. And another interesting one is the Consolata, which has been created by Ruth Raffavine to as a beautiful font for the console. It's been released with the UFL.
So Libertine, Linux Libertine is now under OFL?
The Libertine was originally released under the GPL only, but there's problems with the front exception thing there. So the author agreed also released it under the OFL at the same time. Yeah. Libertine is different from the Red Hat fonts that have just been released. They are another problem. Next slide. Okay. Yeah, so there are more font projects underway, and more designers are considering the UFL. Some people have been talking to Bitstream about releasing Vera under the UFL, but there's been no news lately about that, so I don't know where that is going. And Parsi Web and Free Parsi for Parsi fonts. And people are talking to Red Hat about that UFL as an option for their liberation fonts. And the CJK fonts that we'll mention, I think the UFL is being considered for them. Okay, next slide. Okay, so this is Nicholas's font folder, so it's got lots of free fonts there now. Okay, this is the Greek Font Society that have created these fonts that are available from the 16th, 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, and that is their website where you can get them from. This is the Open Font Library with a pretty usable font by Ben here. That was the first web font released on the Open Font Library.
Only once since the website was down.
That's just true. There's been.
The website went down, they got mistaken.
Was there a. Slash dollar because of this one?
No, it's been, the site went down 2 days after I put it online, I think. It's been a bit
rough. It was based on the free desktop, the Nora site that's had major problems over the past
year
or so. Still has.
This
site isn't fully up yet. The wiki is there, but the rest of the site still needs. case to be test.
Oh, while I think of it, get them to make www.openfontlibrary.org work as well.
Okay, yep.
I was trying that for a couple of weeks and thinking that openfontlibrary.org was down. And it, because it said not responding, it hangs and says doesn't respond. I'm sure I'm not alone.
Yeah, but now it just redirects you to the wiki, so if you don't see this, you'll get to the wiki.
Well, my website wasn't working last time, but www.openfontlibrary.org a week ago still wasn't working. It doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't redirect or anything. It's dead.
Yeah.
It's fixing.
Okay, yep, this is at unifont.org site that describes lots of fonts. And yeah, that mentions the URL. Okay, next. Okay, this is the OFL fonts on the scripts.sil.org site. And there are lots of them. Yeah, that's good stuff. Thanks. Okay, and on the Debian font site, a script has been created for looking at all the different fonts that are free enough to be in Debian. And yeah, but this is the web page, so you can find out about this. Next. Next, I think this is about FontForge. Yeah, so in FontForge, you can now specify the OFL as the font for the, wait, as the license for the font. Next. And yeah, also on the Open Font Library on this back. Next. Yeah, keep going. I don't know why. Yeah, keep going. I think that's it by the OFL fonts. Okay.
All right, thank you, Daniel. So I'm going to go over the CJK Unifonts project. This is Arne Goetsch's project. I'm going to do this real quickly. Can I get the slides up there, Tim?
Yeah.
There are on the, I think that you can get them from the Unifont.
Similar to the Bitstream license. And
they were originally, you know, there was originally one font for the traditional Chinese and another font for simplified Chinese. And Arne took these and combined them, and so you now have a single font, the Yuni, I think it's called Ming Yuni, for the Ming style, Ming or Songti, which is used, this is like your Time Drum font, right? When you print books in Chinese or Japanese, you tend to want to use this kind of style of font, a Ming Ti or Songti. Right. And then there's also a Kaiti font available also. But what's missing is there's no Heiti. And Heiti is like your sans serif font. So if you're looking at Chinese on screen, on a computer screen, at fairly large size, like on a web, you know, headers in a web page or something, you really might want to have a Heiti font. So this is really a sans serif style that is easy to read on screen, and if you get to lower, smaller pixel sizes, you probably want to have a bitmap font. So for smaller pixel sizes, you probably want something like the stuff coming out of the Wen Xuanyi project. Right? So anyway, it started in 2003, and managed to provide a free set of CGK Unicode fonts, Ming, Kai, Li, and Yuan style. These two are really the ones you have to have first, the Ming and the Hei style. The problem right now is the Hei style is missing. So next slide.
Is the Yuan style of that?
No, this is missing too.
Okay.
But no, Yuan Ti is like it's almost an artistic style. Yuan means rounded corners, so you have, round, it means round. So you have rounded corners. I wish we had a picture of what they look like. That he did put pictures in there, so. Okay, next slide. So he's got already the AR. This, again, the AR comes from Arfic, Shanpei Song style Uni, and the Zenkai Uni style. Each font comes in two flavors. One is the Unicode one, and one is the same thing with a different set of glyphs for the extension for Hakka and these other minority languages. So is a phonetic transcription system. And let's go to the next slide, let's see what those look like. It's used for Minan and Hakka languages. The MBA flavor has different glyph shapes. So it's really kind of like in Gentium, you have different, is it there, Gentium Vault has a different set of, the diacritic marks are shaped differently.
Yeah, so
it's the same idea as doing something like that. Next slide. Yeah, so this is sort of like the official style for these four characters, for the loops, for the extended versions, and some people prefer to do it this way, so he's got another font that contains that macro. You know, if the free desktop, if there were the ability to select alternate glyphs from an OpenType font, he could have put those into a single font file, right? But that's not really available today on the free desktop, so he's got two separate font files. Yeah, so this is one of the challenges, is that there are different preferences for some very small subset of characters, where the Chinese and the Japanese do it differently. Like in Japan, this little hook always goes to the right, but in China, it tends to go to the left, except in Taiwan, it tends to go to the right sometimes. Not always. So kind of minor details like that. But people sometimes are very particular about the way their fonts look. Okay, next. Yeah, so the solution to this problem would be to use TrueType collections with a single TrueType collection file with multiple virtual fonts. It would contain the original glyphs, as well as the simplified and traditional, the different style variants.
as we just saw in the previous slide. So he plans to do this with this KT project. Next slide. Right, TrueType collections only work with the most recent versions of Pango and Qt4, but that's probably not really going to be a problem because it's going to take a long time for him to get this KT font anyway. Okay, let's go on. Yeah, this is the thing that's really needed because there is no free KT font for the free desktop. So he plans to put that into TrueType collection format. He plans to make it stroke compatible with Deja Vu Sans. The font will contain only CJK glyphs, no Latin glyphs, so that it could be used together with Deja Vu Sans, and you would pick up your Latin glyphs from Deja Vu. And it will contain the glyph variants, and it will be released under the Open Font license. So I think it's a great project if it comes to fruition. Next slide, please. Yeah, he also wants to do the UNT. Next slide. Yeah, now here's the way they want to do it. There is a text file which contains stroke positions for many, not all of them, but many of the CJK glyphs. Well, it says here, Hanzi and Plane Zero are complete, so that's almost everything most people ever need to see. Right? That's so the plan is to take this file and convert it using a Python script to convert it to FontForge format. And you could then use this as a source for both the HT and the UNT styles. So this would be a great way to get this project moving quickly. And on the unifont.org/text-layout-2007 presentations page, there is a link with his proof of concept fonts that have been built using this Python script. So they're not complete fonts, they're not intended to be pretty or used for production purposes, but simply as a proof of concept to show that you can take this text file that contains stroke information and convert them into usable fonts. Okay. Any questions on that? Okay, so now let's talk about this sort of pan-Unicode font issue. Okay, Ben, so I'm going to turn it over to Ben.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to take you on a discussion that has been going on for more than a year, I think, with Deja Vu. We still haven't found a solution into it. Yeah, yes. But this was a feature request we got last Friday again in Deja Vu. Basically, it asks for us to put Khmer in Deja Vu. Now, a lot of people get their tools, but I think that's a touch. Anyway. A lot of people really don't want to see such glyphs in Deja Vu, as we won't have to stick to Latin, Greek, and Cyrillic. But really, we currently have the policy to just, if someone wants to do the glyphs and he can do it very well, we now just put it in. That was decided by Stepan Duro, who was who was maintaining the font before we took out of charge of it, and it still hasn't changed because the arguments for and against it are reliving us all the time. Not a pan-Unicode font, a pan-Unicode meaning that you get all possible scripts in it, was free fonts that didn't really popular anymore because quality was really getting down. And yeah, like the question now is why are we getting it in the HR view? Because people are really requesting it. They have sometimes their own fonts right now, but they sometimes have those ugly Latin letters and they can't use it on the screen right now. So they have these fuzzy serif Latin letters next to their own script. So they want us to put their scripts in Deja Vu to read out the nice Latin letters. So if we have the nice other script letters, it will work magically. Yeah, there's also a style issue. You can, with font config, you can combine a lot of fonts into one meta font, for example. But it's difficult to match two fonts so they look kind of the same, that they don't really. They should have a visual appearance that is a nice combination of the two scripts. And many scripts also use Latin punctuation, for example. So you don't want to get two different question marks, for example, for Hebrew and for Latin. If you can have the same one, that's a plus as well, which is basically. Because given that style issue problem, we are just going forward with Deja Vu for adding these new scripts. Now the question is, how do we want to do it, really? Do you want to be it in one big font, which I don't actually want it all in one big font, that's my personal preference. I want to split it up, at least in a few different fonts, but okay. As I've said, we've been discussing it for over a year now. People sometimes get religiously believe about it because don't split up the fonts or otherwise, well, they just move out to another font. I think they start using this thing there again, so we don't hear it anymore. Yeah, not an issue really, stick to what you know best. I mean, we obviously don't know anything about commands. We have to do a lot of research before we can do something like it. Or we have to find people who wanted to do it for us, but those are really rare. Yeah, Go2000 as an example of someone putting in a lot of glyphs for every script as possible, but which has actually resulted in a font which isn't usable for almost any script at all. So we certainly don't want that to happen in Deja Vu. We really try to keep quality up as a minimum requirement. Sometimes the first set of glyphs from a different script aren't really nice at all sometimes. We've had Hebrew, for example, which was said not that long ago, which basically had the issue that they were too wide. That's something that the designer didn't know about. He wanted to keep the style of Deja Vu, which has pretty wide letters. So we tried to move that to Hebrew, and actually they don't like that at all in Hebrew. So I think last release we fixed a lot of those issues as well in Hebrew. But the project is on monthly or 1.5 monthly release. So it gets updated quite quickly. And the scripts that are in it are really getting better quite fast. But yeah, issues. And users will always complain that something you learn when you have some projects. We try to do reviews by native speakers, of course, but even that is almost impossible sometimes. To just talk to people. I mean, for Hebrew, it's not a problem, but then if Tifinach was added, was better. So finding someone who knows Tifinach is really almost impossible. And certainly finding someone who would be able to make this himself is, not. You don't even know how to start with it sometimes. Next. Yeah, so now to the issues of the Pan-Unicode fonts. Metrics. In different scripts are incompatible, that's certainly a fact. You have Arabic, for example, which doesn't fit at all with X heights, Alexander heights, or Latin, for Khmer, for example. It's already a problem with Vietnamese in Deja Vu because the Vietnamese is all the accents on top of capitals, for example, and Deja Vu just doesn't have enough space above capitals to put them all there. So now we just put it, we try to make it visual as it has to be. Yeah, we are designing it the way it has to look, but we have the problem that sometimes it will get tough or bar.
But it's only cut off on Windows.
It can also overlap or something.
Yeah.
It exists in the form of base state and open type, which probably you can't pay too much on it. It's practically also quite, I think, OpenOffice supports it, but I haven't tested that out yet. Because getting base tables in font is also difficult.
OpenOffice only supports FICU, yes.
But I don't know if ICU does
it. It doesn't. OpenOffice doesn't support it.
So what
if we had someone who said it was supported. Base table basically means that
it may be supported on Windows if Unistrat supports it, because I don't use Unistrat.
For Vietnamese, for example, it would say if you type in Vietnamese, it would make more space available between the lines. So the line spacing would change when you type Vietnamese.
So the line spacing is uneven in your document?
Yeah.
Or Latin?
Not if you say I'm typing Vietnamese here, then it would type always the Latin.
Yeah. Okay.
It's all different. It can also work to just get the scripts aligned correctly together.
The base tables used to align scripts.
Yeah. Okay.
Next. The base table can also work across fonts, so you don't have to have one single font. You can have two fonts and the base table.
Okay.
Or two fonts.
Oh, it does work across fonts. Huh?
The specification says it does.
Now, don't put it on your phone. We are really getting sometimes against limits of the renderers, for example. We had to use Kerning Burning Bangle over a year ago, which, suddenly Deja Vu didn't look right. It was after adding Arabic, I think. That was a wider left script, and Bangle got totally confused with all the different things.
Interject here, there's one, for us, there's one really good reason not to put them on front, and that is
downloads.
Well, there's the downloads, there's the memory, there's caching the stuff in RAM. It makes doing complex scripts trickier if you're starting to try and cram them all into a single font. And some of the behavior tables for some of the more complex scripts like Camilla get quite large. So if you then multiply that by each difficult complex script, you've got a lot of large tables, and you can grow the size of the font quite dramatically.
That's much an issue, of course. The font files also become a huge price. And it's not the font format we're using, JavaScript is SFT, the native file format for font function, which is basically text based, which we can use to SFT, for example. But those files are becoming sometimes it's 10 times the size of the eventual through type, I think. So it's already become very big in our subversion.
You start excluding devices too. I mean, you can, which for someone using one of these things, or maybe a better one. A 45 megabyte font is a bit impractical.
There's things like the other thing is if you're working on a low power device like the LPC, for instance, why on earth do you want blitz in there for every language under the sun? If this thing's only going to use by school children, why do you need blitz for every language under the sun if this thing's only going to be used by school children in China or in Brazil? I localize the rest of the interface. So if you break it up and use font config, you can add fonts as you need them. So that's true. It's about being forced to carry them around all the time, just in case.
Right, so getting to the font config thing you need to
follow. It seems a bit like the argument between DLLs and static linking programs.
DLL?
So it sounds a bit like the argument for static linking and DLLs in programming.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with those issues.
You end up with big binaries with everything but kitchen sink in there if you only want to have.
Also, an issue if I put Hebrew in deja vu, all the people that in deja vu as their main Latin font, suddenly you have also the Hebrew fonts from deja vu. Instead of the one they used to, up to IL or something they're always using. So, should we split the fonts then? If inevitably we have to do it, the fonts file format is limited. Open type, for example, only supports 65,000 ID glyphs. It's quite large and may not be quite there yet, but it gets really weak when you have all the language variants for external for different schemes. But yeah, the set of fonts are the main thing. Yeah, I'm coming from here from the assumption that we may want to have a collection of fonts, not all in one specific font, but one that can work together nicely.
Making it harder to maintain. It also makes it harder to get native volunteer. I mean, you're talking about, earlier on we were talking about opening up making tools so that anybody could do drift design. You could get a real open source community working on font design, which is presumably with the idea of getting national people to speak and use the scripts to actually do the design. Well, if you're starting to look at, kind of computers they can afford in Thailand. They're the kind of computers that are about 5 years behind the way we're using anything at the moment, if they're lucky. You can buy the more expensive ones, it's just they cost a lot of money. So if you start making these fonts really big, then you're going to need more powerful machines to start working on.
I have to be a bit careful with that argument. I think you have to distinguish, it's necessary to distinguish between. Firstly, between people using computers and people developing stuff,
yeah.
But second, to understand And the GNOME project went through this and said, well, how much memory should we assume for computers in India? And asked quite a few people in India. Because, you know, the first thought, you can say, well, they can buy one byte of memory each on average. But, of course, you have to take an average of those people who can afford to buy a computer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, what I'm talking about is at the moment the most popular category of computers in Thailand.
Right.
I think it's 1,000 baht or 10,000 baht machine. Basically, government-sponsored, subsidized design computers. And these are the most famous you can serve for this amount. And you're welcome to compete and try and outdo it. And they did. It came with Linux preloaded because it was the only way they could meet the price.
Right.
Of course, what happens is they never be taken from your shop and get Windows dumped on there from some dodgy download somewhere.
Right.
And, you know, some of them are quite well spec, but they're not. They're not the kind of machines that, say, Western
developers
are used to.
Right. Yeah, I'm not really disagreeing with you.
Yeah,
like that. Really? And certainly not at all in Thailand's case, but one has to be careful overall.
Yeah, it's not like they're all on 64K or anything.
Right.
I'm not saying that they're like struggling, but right. I'm just saying there's an argument for keeping the... for splitting this stuff up, because it makes it easier for volunteers to get involved with their script.
Part of what needs to happen, though, maybe this will be your next slide and we should just go there. Part of what needs to happen is how to join them again, which is indeed your next slide, and handle the configuration of, you know, imagine if I had times Roman A to M and times Roman N to Z in a Western script. And it becomes, and I have in fact worked with fonts that I had to do that 4 years ago, a decorative initials where they didn't all fit. And I've still got some. It becomes immediately obvious that you need some infrastructure to manage that.
Yeah,
which is the next slide, yeah.
Yeah, we could use font config for it, so, but it has some problems actually. Because users would have to manually edit their fonts on the file. Actually not people willing to, I think. So mostly the distributions won't do it, so it's probably... But the main issue with font config is exactly this, that not every programming is uses font configs still. And Windows and macOS is certainly out of the question. If we have the font sets of the styles that combine nicely, we cannot use up the columns and use that font on Windows, for example. You have to select that font each time you go. I don't know if there are better ways.
I thought there was a port as font config for Windows. I thought it was there.
But is there some analog thing in Windows? I don't know.
There is most. Systems seem to have a font fault access. I mean, on Windows, it
That's a font fault access.
You don't get any other equipment, it'll start trying.
Can you really have font config set now of this font here, this font?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot more control of font for you. What I'm saying is that you shouldn't, if you've got, say, a font for GNOME installed on Windows, and you don't ask for a specific font, then I think Word is intelligent enough to go, I've got this font, start putting in the instrument there.
It is, but the method it uses
it's not particularly pretty. It
uses Panos numbers. Different versions of Windows use different versions of Panos numbers.
I thought it matched on the other fields as well.
It starts off the same.
On our platforms, if something like it, something universal has existed, it wouldn't actually be an issue here. We could just separate all the fonts, I think, and... issues that aren't having
maybe you could distinguish.
There are more issues with the next slide, yeah. Different computers, different font configurations. If you have a document set up in what that one meta font, that's combined everything, and you put it over to another computer with another configuration, basically layout can change completely if you don't have the same configuration,
if they're not experts are the same, for example. So we need something to really make sure that everyone uses the same configuration in the end. I'm not expecting to be able to do that. So basically,
well, it seems to me that you could distinguish usefully between, for example, on Linux, a free software that is using functconfig or not using functconfig. There seem to be two kinds of software on Linux that are not using functconfig. Maybe three if you count things like Wine and Alien software that's running with some kind of virtualization, but I'll discount that. You've got commercial software, and I'll include in that software written by some large corporation used inside behind their firewall internally, perhaps with OSF motif written 20 years ago, 10 years ago. That seems to be the most common, in fact. And then the second most common is applications using older toolkits that are using the X Windows server-side fonts. And in the case of the server-side fonts, font config is actually the least of your problems because they're also typically restricted to an 8-bit character set. Not always. Sun, for a long time, had a 32-bit character set available, the white jar stuff for X. But most people are going to be using an 8-bit character set in that environment. So, I mean, they're not people to worry about. You can't help them. The act of solving one problem will solve the other, therefore you don't need to help them. The commercial people, either they're going to move to functconfig, or their client customers are already happy. And the customers who are not happy are the ones who can't use the software right now. So there's a commercial incentive to move. But it's, again, not your problem. There are a few really old unmaintained programs on Linux, some of which are quite popular, that are not using functconfig. And my own feeling is that we just need to generate more incentive for those to be moved into the future. Linux distributions are starting to abandon support for client-side fonts in X. That is to say, the support is still there, but they don't come with any. The font server's not running, and you get very few fonts in a default install, and you have to go and get them, because it's just too much hassle and too much disk space and too many packages and all that crap. I hear you about the other platforms. And again, free software on Windows needs to have some kind of... Either it needs to use a font config port, which I understand exists, actually. I don't know how well it works on Windows, how well it fits in with the Windows font infrastructure.
We'll be using graph files. Or uses on Windows because we often get bug reports for Windows. So
I'm sure you do.
We cannot ignore those.
I'm not suggesting that you ignore them, but I'm saying, I think the platforms have to be treated separately to some extent, and then you say, well, what can we do on Windows? To some extent, it's the same as if I install some of the SIL fonts and I try and use them on a platform without any special software or anything. And the SAL download page is going to say to me, does say to me, well, for this font, you know, you need. Or the SPL fonts, for example, again. The Society of Biblical Literature has some great fonts for ancient Hebrew and some new one for Greek coming along that John Hudson's been working on. And you need to have special software to use them because there weren't any open type engines on the planet.
We have the majority of our software.
Oh, yeah. I did say some.
I think the only one that comes to mind right now.
Yeah, I think that may be true, but I don't know. A while ago it was more, and I think, in fact, the world's caught up.
Yeah, I mean, Gentium's own type of...
Right.
So, I guess, I know I was one of the people who was discussing this stuff, and I have a certain opinion about it for the free desktop, right? But I understand that you also need to support Windows users. So here's what I think is the danger for deja vu fonts. Like, if you guys... What I noticed is by, for example, introducing... When you introduced Arabic glyphs into deja vu fonts, there was a big uproar because it created bugs and people didn't like the way things looked and blah, 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 blah. So I think that's a danger for the reputation of the project, right? You have to be really careful about, so because especially when, as we know, you're very focused on high quality glyphs, so it's a risk to introduce glyphs for Arabic without. Yeah, and the Hebrew was another case, right? Hebrew would be a similar case, so I would think.
For Hebrew, it's really strange because the person who designed the glyphs actually did get some review, and it was okay. And then we got a bug report saying that the glitter was squashed, but that was pretty much it, so we had no idea how to fix it really, except we could make it unsquashed.
That's one of the arguments for splitting. It is different communities, even within the same language.
Right.
Different cultural status, for instance. I mean, if depending on the level of education and study, you'll find there'll be some amount of people who will say, well, this one's easier to read than that one.
Another option is to also split up the fonts. It could discard some scripts in a font, for example. I don't know exactly how to do it. It was said it was possible once to me long ago, and it was rather difficult to do it.
The point I wanted to make was that later on we get more feedback with like screenshots or the person actually saying this clip, this bar is too far and this thing is too small and etc. That's exactly what we need. We can't do anything if people just tell us, oh, Arabic sucks and deja vu.
So maybe tell us exactly what
goes wrong and what we should do right.
So I suspect that, I mean, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. I suspect that what you might have to do is, in fact, do both, where you're going to have to say, okay, here are the fonts all split up. Here's the LGC character set, here's the Arabic, here's the Hebrew, blah, blah, blah. Assuming that the Linux distributors, and I don't think they're really there yet, but assuming that the Linux distributors at some point in the future will agree upon a sort of standard font config that would now synthesize your and it's actually, it goes beyond that. You want the Linux distributors to provide a fontconfig.conf file that's reasonably good, a reasonably good default, but yet you also want users to have ideally through a GUI interface, the ability to say, actually, I don't want these Arabic glyphs, or actually, I don't want these Vietnamese, I don't want to use Deja Vu for the Vietnamese glyphs because I think I don't like them, or whatever, But the Linux distributor would provide a set of defaults that would work, that would be based on using the power of font config to create these synthesized sans or synthesized serif glyphs, right? So for Deja Vu, then, you split it up. But then for your other platforms, like for the Windows users, you also have different combinations. I think it would be... It's probably not possible to do it now, but it would be interesting if I could go onto the Deja Vu site and say, okay, well, I actually have things I could check off and say, okay, I want this block, LGC is checked off by default, and then I'm a Khmer OS user or whatever.
About such a build script once that users could select, I want this script is generated fonts, we have fonts while combining. It's really hard to do that as well.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's easy, but I can see how there might be valuable. It might be valuable if you could do that. And then, you mentioned, Ben, the problem with many of these fonts, like even Khmer, for example, maybe they use an English question or, Latin question mark and other punctuation marks. But that I don't see as really being a... it seems to me that's a solvable problem. You can just decide what are the punctuation marks that will always go into the font, if there was a way to do it, right? So those are. And then the other question is, okay, so suppose you could do that, but then the other problem is, and I guess this is more a question because I don't know how it works in the Deja Vu project, is how do you get feedback? I mean, maybe you can have a system where whenever, like, these people that want Khmer in there, and you say, okay, well, here's a beta version that contains Khmer, but we're not going to release this until we get, you know, X number of months of feedback, you know, from X number of people, until you've got actually 30 people who've responded or something. I mean, it's a problem, too. If you only get one or two people responding, you know, like one person says, no, I hate those Arabic glyphs suck. Well, that's actually useless information, because it's only valuable.
It's too, if we find two people who want to review it, it's already a success some of the times. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem, if you can't get enough people. But if you're only getting one or two people, actually that information is useless, because statistically speaking, you're not getting a representative sample of the user community. You know, you might just happen to get that one guy who's really ardent or adamant that, oh, this sucks, or whatever. In fact, maybe it doesn't suck. Maybe it's actually very good. But so until you get at least a, you know, minimal statistically valid sample of people to review it, how can you? It's like a movie, right? You know, some people like a movie, other people hate it. How do you, until you get at least five different people or something, how are you going to know?
Because we have, with all those open releases, we have something like a spiritual release early.
Ooh, nice.
So, if.
Thanks, Nvidia.
If we don't release it, no people will use it, of course.
Yeah.
If we release it, everyone will use it immediately, and we get all the reports in first release. So.
But this is the same with open. This is the same with software as well. You know, I think your story is exactly the same as pretty much every other project. And as with software, you get 4,000 people who are affected by something and three who send in a report. Sometimes the report is, it doesn't work. Sometimes the report is, well, under this circumstance, in this configuration, this effect causes this, and here's a trace, and I just, you know, and here's a patch, by the way. And there's a whole spectrum in between. And one of the difficulties is that people have more awareness that people are more consciously aware that computer programs are software, that things happen on their computer because of programs, and if something goes wrong, it's a program's fault. People are not so well aware that text is displayed, that fonts are the user interface of text, and so that they're not aware of fonts, and so I think that's a problem.
And people, but if it's something that you notice right away, if the fonts don't look right, you notice it right away. You don't have to be technically savvy, right? As you would, for example, with a program, you have to be actually have some degree of understanding if you're going to file a bug report.
Yes, but you can still be aware that there's a problem. I mean, like, this is where your problem is lowercase e doesn't come. You press the lowercase e button in the text field and nothing happens. Or as anyone who's used GNOME terminal knows, there used to be a common misfeature where lowercase x would stop working fairly common frequently. And, people know how to report that.
Right.
And even if they don't know how to report it, they do know, well, I really like Linux, but the lowercase x key stopped working. And how do you know?
So the only thing I can think of is just, I mean, do you guys currently have a policy where you release a sort of beta version, but then you have a timeline?
We don't have a policy, we just have discussions about it.
Yeah.
So
I think that's one way you might be able to protect yourself a little bit. You know, you say, well, we have the stable release, but if you're if you downloaded the beta and you don't like it, give us feedback, but don't complain to us that it doesn't work right, because it's only a beta.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically signing it and saying this is only for experimentation, not for production use.
When user groups are made, they are designed in a branch, so we get those written in branch designs. We could release those branches, of course, before we put them
in the prompt itself. But yeah, it's getting difficult to just update those branches to.
Yeah, so that's, I guess, another thing where splitting up can help, because then you can release the split font separately as it's being developed, and yeah, explicitly say these are betas, we're still working on it, but we'd like you to give us feedback.
And the other thing is, can you, like with, let's say, Khmer, so somebody from the Khmer community said they wanted Khmer in there, right? And then have you gone back and said, well, you guys are aware of the Khmer OS project, right?
Yeah,
why not?
This.
And why not, you know, what's wrong with using that? Or maybe saying, getting together with the Khmer OS project and saying, well, these guys want these glyphs in here. What do you guys think? Should we put them in here or not? Since presumably they're as close as you can.
Is this really debuggable to adapt one of the Khmer OS fonts, and we don't simply merge other fonts because we want to have the same styles and we don't want to another font and just merge it.
So there specifically was talking about merging,
that doesn't make sense. Because I think that was with the free fonts, you know, those. As far as I can see, those free fonts just should be thrown away. And that's not to try to criticize Peter, what's his name, Peter Lin, or, I mean, that the people who did it.
Yeah, Javier Silva.
What's that? The folks that did free font, but they just tried to gather a bunch of pre-existing fonts and dump them together, and the font metrics are completely messed up, and it's the font is essentially unusable, and it's not there's it's very poor quality. So why even have it? I think some distributions still have free font listed in the font config. It shouldn't be there. It should be thrown away. It should be only the high quality stuff like Deja Vu and Gentium and, you know, other stuff that we know are high quality fonts. I mean.
I think you have to make that knowledge more obvious to people. Like, from my normal user perspective, I come to a Linux computer, I can install programs, but I have no idea which fonts are the good ones. So perhaps you should have any system to tell people, well, we recommend these ones, we're recently working on these ones. It should be even possible to install it as a normal user program, like download these files, edit it around in this font config, like not even taking care about which distribution it's running on, to get nearer to the people.
I agree with you 100%. I think that, you know, it would be nice to have some sort of graphical user interface where you can install fonts and they go in your .fonts directly, right? So from KDE, for example, you can install the fonts, they go in your .fonts config directly. But even though they're there, that doesn't let you edit your font config.
Yeah.
So font config is actually controlling if you go to, you know, if you're just using some generic sans serif font, you know, you don't know exactly what's going to happen. So it would be nice if there was some kind of graphical interface where you could set up font config. Or, like, as I talked about earlier, you know, if I ever get that Fontima project written, you know, where there would be actually a way that you could now classify all the fonts that you had on your machine and have some sort of graphical interface so you can manage what's being used and, right? Like you have on Windows, if you look at the professional font managers for Windows or for OS X, you can turn things on and turn them off, right? So you don't actually uninstall a font, but you can temporarily turn it off if you don't want to use it.
Right.
And so save system resources or whatever it does, right? But none of that exists in
KDE4, I think it's improved so you can disable fonts, I think. It's use font config mentioned, so.
But it's only one part of the problem. The main part I see is how do we tell people which fonts are the good ones?
if you have a program where you have a server somewhere where you have fonts on it or links to fonts in to it, whatever, with some kind of rating, you could get the good fonts out easier. Yeah. You could also like integrate some feedback, like I want to comment on that font, and these messages will go directly to you or whoever is responsible for that one. And so you get a lot nearer to the people.
Yeah, I think you're right. If you look at, like this OFLB project,
yes,
it has the potential, OFLB has the potential to be a user, a site that's built with contributions from the community,
yeah,
right? Where the community provides feedback and rates fonts just like you would rate movies, right? But it's OFLB is not there yet.
No, basically, is everyone familiar with the Open Font Library?
Yeah, it's openfontlibrary.org.
Okay. It's edged down, like.
Yeah, it's not.
So it's on the free desktop.org servers, and they've been having problems recently, so it's down at the moment, and it'll be back soon on its own dedicated machine with the Open Clipart Library, which is a sister project to. And it's run by the Open Clipart Library guys. I think one or two of them actually work for Creative Commons in San Francisco. And it's using the CC host content management system, which is developed by Creative Commons for making these kinds of sites. And John Phillips is the main guy on the Open Font Library. There's a bunch of people. And his idea for the Open Font Library is to collect together all of the Open Fonts and then push them out to distros. So the Open Font Library would be the place, be a kind of single point to put a font into to get it pushed out to the distros. And maybe have ideal default font config file. We could maybe go into that process.
So it's
a fair way off.
I think that's the problem. Then you look at like if you look at my site, which is unifont.org/fontguide, then you've got a whole bunch of fonts there, and most of the stuff on there are high quality fonts because I review stuff that people send in. But the problem with unifont.org is it's not interactive. There's no. I mean, it would be nice if you could take something like unifont.org as it exists and turn it into an interactive site where people could provide feedback on the font. Because then you. Right? Or OFLB.
Yeah.
We're
talking about a free software font platform. And that's. Yeah, some of the
really good trees where you've got a lot of user feedback.
You've got SIL making a kind of catalog as well, which is just a list of your own fonts.
But I think it would be really good, like as you say. What's your name, sorry?
I'm Holger Schröder. I am one of these KDE on Windows guy, and I'm with KDE since 99 or so.
Yeah.
So perhaps if you could get us the content to provide, we could hack on this font installation tool on KDE to make it easier for KDE people to install fonts and for you to get feedback.
Okay, so maybe we should continue this conversation. I think there's a lot of potential.
Cool.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I agree with you 100%. And then if you look at do you know myfonts.com? You ever look at myfonts.com?
Not yet.
So myfonts.com is an Ajax, it's a commercial website for commercial graphic artists. And if you go on there, it's also an Ajax website. You know, it uses Ajax technology. So you can go in and say, oh, I like this font. I wonder what this font would look like if I typeset such and such a word or such and such a title. And so you can literally type in, you can type in your own name. I can type in Edward on there. And then it will instantly show. Not instantly, but it'll go back and hit the server and bring back GIF images or PNG images of 10 or 20 different fonts that I've selected.
Yeah.
So I can see what it looks like.
Okay.
So you get there's a lot of user feedback, right? And also I myself too did I did something called Font Playground, which is a similar idea where you could type in a code and then hit enter and it will take typeset the quotation or the words that you typed in whatever font you want it. So you get some sort of instant feedback before you've even downloaded the font on what it might look like. So I think that it would be nice to have to see. That's another thing that you would want to have in that kind of a group. Yeah. Have you seen that?
The playground, yeah.
Font Playground, yeah.
I haven't gone all the way through it, but on which one was it? Script.sml
on the board.
Yeah, one of our general font FAQ questions. Why can't you create a single font that contains all the scripts?
Why can't you
create a single font
that contains all the scripts needed rather than separate fonts?
Every now and again, someone says, why can't you create a single program that contains all the features? And apart from Emacs, there isn't one.
They have that, it's called Emacs.
Yes, right.
I don't know if any of the answers there would be helpful to your discussion.
You said something that actually gave me an idea, by the way. One of the problems we used to have with Type 1 fonts, if anyone is old enough to remember Type 1 fonts, is that when you install them in some operating systems, you need multiple files. So in Windows, you needed a PFM file and the font file. Linux, for a long time, just needed the file because very few applications that could do kerning. But if you did actually have an application that was good enough to do kerning and make composite glyphs and stuff, you needed the AFM file. And sometimes different programs, you know, good old TROF or TEC needed metrics in their own format and so on. Today, with an OpenType font, you just have one file. But now we're talking about having a font config file as well. And so we're in danger of being back to two files. Mm-hmm. But what if... But OpenType is extensible. Okay, you can add... In fact, OpenType is an extension of TrueType by adding tables. So we could add a table. Right, you could actually put font config info in. You could put default font config info into the font, and I wonder if that would be useful. If the open source community could agree on having a TrueType table that would be in an OpenType or TrueType font, that would be the font config def you wanted.
If we're going to go down that route, is it worth studying to see if it's just going to be font config information? If the boundaries are fuzzy, so you probably want to make it cross-platform. You know, if you can provide the information in the form that Windows can then use natively or Apple can use natively, if there is something like it, rather than something that requires a port font config,
right,
font config can still be used.
Right.
Then,
yes, it sounds even better.
Like a standard.
Right, it sounds even better.
Well, font config just basically uses an XML file format, so...
Yes.
I mean, I guess it sort of depends on...
But it is font config specific.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Well, that's a question. And then the other question is font config XML even covering the right? Is it actually covering all the information you need or not?
Yeah.
I don't think it is.
It's kind of a question mark.
Yeah. I don't think font config is actually. Actually, I think font config is still needs to be improved.
Well, Keith isn't here, but he is very willing to make improvements.
Yeah.
So I'm sure if we could come up with the information that is needed, then it will go into the program.
You can talk about an XML file. I mean, you can't very well stuff XML into a TrueType table.
I bet you could if you tried.
Oh, okay. Well, you could if you tried. I'm not saying it's the right thing to do.
It may not be, but I actually don't see why not. No. I don't really see a problem.
Yeah,
I don't see a problem
at all.
You can put strings in there.
It's just binary data.
Yeah.
But...
But if you could have an XML file which is parsable by anything, like Perl and blah blah blah, just leave it as an XML title. Don't even bother sticking it in. I don't know, I guess I'm not convinced that you want to stuff it in an open table.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not convinced you want to stuff it in as pure text perhaps, but I mean, there's one or two projects that are binary XML, that's regularized ways of translating XML into a title. It's kind of.
I don't know that the file. I mean, when you've got a 45 megabyte font file and a 1 kilobyte font config file. I don't buy that argument. I do buy the argument that there's a limit.
I'm talking from the argument of the point of view when you don't have
3 to
500
byte font
file.
Right.
I'm talking about
that you've
got a 500k font file.
Okay, well, you've got a 500k font file and a 300 byte font config file, probably. I mean, they're tiny.
Yeah, it's missing.
Yeah. So
used to staring at the binary data.
Yeah,
so
it is binary. I promise you, there is no analog XML. We have not defined an analog XML. It's all binary.
Yeah, but our analog data, which you put in the font, actually, is copies data from a collection of fonts.
Right.
When you put font copy data in one font, right, don't you really see it?
Well, people sometimes do. What I'm hoping for is that we can work towards the idea that I can install a font right now in GNOME, for example, by dragging it into my fonts file. That's all I need to do. Possibly I can in KDE as well, I just don't know. But when we start saying there's multiple files, it gets too complicated for humans to manage.
I guess what you're talking about is, I mean, font config might just be a kind of neat handle that hangs the idea off, but basically enough information that goes with the font for font config to start making intelligent decisions about.
Well, yeah, that's something I thought about too. When I was thinking about this. When I was thinking about the Fontima thing is there really isn't enough information in fonts to tell you everything you want to know,
right,
about the font. But there's certainly opportunity among
is or is not.
Is not.
Is it, okay.
There is not.
Yeah, I would agree.
Right. It would be nice if. For example, what's a good example? Well, for different kind of style information, right? There's lots of different styles of fonts.
I mean, the family fields tend to get used to try and do that.
Right, it's a mishmash. There's no standard.
There's no, nobody's really agreed on what font fits in what family. There's no real definition of
them. Right.
I'd say come and look at my Inkscape font list and you'd see that this thing's pretty broken.
Yeah.
And we don't have anything like Extensis or Suitcase or good old Adobe Type Reunion on Linux.
Right.
The other platforms need it too, which is why those products exist.
Right.
To a greater or lesser extent.
So we're right now, we're at 12:20 p.m. So do we want to break for lunch or something? And then...
What was the plan for lunch? In terms of... I mean, it was scheduled for only a half hour, so...
Oh, really?
No,
is that possible?
Oh, an hour and a half. Oh, okay.
Yeah,
we're yeah.
We did last night.
So yeah, the plan is when we come back from lunch, then if you talk, give your talk, hopefully Bed Bath will come around and join us. And
yeah, we're going down. Like, you know, right.
Right. And then we'll have Bed Bath and Seaman and yourself. And, Sharon and Kenichi, all the layout engine people here in one room. So, that was the plan. Okay, so I think why don't we break for lunch, and then the plan of the afternoon, as I just said, is we'll have Eric talk about ICU first, and that's just an arbitrary decision, but as good as any other, and then we'll proceed from there. And yes.
Good question. The day trip tomorrow is a register.
What's that?
The day trip.
So you have to register
to the.
Oh, you have to register for it?
Lock on.
Yeah. I was just wondering, it may be a bit early to ask this, but it only takes on whether or not that time we want to continue discussion about on the day trip. Is there?
Yeah, okay. I don't know. What do people want to do?
Okay. If we have to have an earlier day.
Might be a bit tricky if everyone's inside a coach or something.
So why not
renting coaches?
When we... Oh, when... yeah. How many people did register for the day trip? Are people going on the day trip? I think I did.
I don't know.
I can find out on the website about how much it costs or where to register.
No, it's free. But I think you have to register.
And it's definitely affordable.
There was an email saying that they have buses, they think there's room for everybody, but they're not 100% sure, so email and then you get on first priority in case they run short of space or something. That's what the email I just got.
Oh, okay. I still don't know what we're looking for.
Yeah, I mean,
also wonder if it's going to be raining.
Whether it's even worth going. Well,